Marnie, do the intro.
We're dressed in black for our funeral today.
Mm. Do you want to say a few words about the late North Melbourne Football Club?
No, that's so grim, Josh.
You brought up the funeral thing.
Yeah, I know, but I take it back. I regret it.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Further North.
Yeah. We've been going 20 seconds, Marnie. We've been going 20 seconds.
If you don't laugh, you'll cry. So I'm just doing everything I can to laugh at the moment.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, look, trying times, this is when we stick together and we all cry as one.
I do just want to say one thing before we get started on today's pod. I just want to say thank you to everyone who does tune in and listen to us week in, week out.
Yeah.
It can be really tough sometimes for us to, you know, jump on the mic and record. It's obviously been a very grim start to the season. And, you know, we love the club so much and we do this out of just the love that we do have for the club.
Yes.
And we understand it's probably can be a really tough listen at times. But again, I just want to reiterate how appreciative we are of everyone who does tune in, week out, who interacts with us, watches us on YouTube and, yeah, just sort of stands by us and by the club. We really, really appreciate the support.
Mm. What we should do, we need to do something like the Tasmanian Devils where everyone who's been listening to this podcast before we get good, we need to like get them to sign up to something and make a shrine to everyone who's listened to the Further North podcast.
Maybe we'll have like a party at the end of the year or something.
Yeah, we can all sign something and be like, if anyone ever calls you a bandwagon fan when North Melbourne does their three-peat in 2045.
We're definitely not bandwagon fans.
If anyone calls anyone a bandwagon fan when we do our three-peat in 2045, you can refer back to me. I will send that person the proof that you were here from the dark days. So we will organise something like
that. We'll figure that out, guys.
One day, but probably not soon because we're going to podcast instead. So a very exciting, soggy game up in Darwin.
Honestly, why is football played in Darwin?
Is that the wettest game you've – like, not – I know that water, but like
– No, no. Do you know the wettest game we've ever played? It was also against the Suns. We played in Cairns. And it was like torrential rain. It was like water. Like
that's the Kane Turner photo. Is that the one with the Kane Turner photo where he's like skidding in midair?
Yeah.
When I meant wet, I meant like soggy, like sweat.
Oh, okay. I was talking about like actually wet. No, not actually wet.
I've never seen Guernseys shine and look like they've just been dunked in oil. You know what I mean?
Delish.
It's gross.
Love.
Anyway, that's a great note to start on. But hey, it gets worse from here because we're going to talk about the game. So
yeah, that's where the podcast is peaked for today.
Yeah, absolutely. Wait till Marnie's Hugh Greenwood take.
Oh, God. Beware, everyone.
What is it? 52 to 120 we lost. Something along those lines.
Surprise.
Let's just start off talking about how we felt. Let's not talk about anything within the game. Just how did you feel when the final siren
went? I actually felt really sad last
that
night.
I think that may have been the most hurtful game for me.
I'm kind of at my breaking point a little bit.
I think, yeah, that's how I felt too. I had to take a moment after the game. I was frustrated. I was angry. I need to go take a shower and just, you know, when you have shower thoughts and you just stand there and the water's like running on the back of your neck and you've just realized, oh my God, I've been standing still like a statue for like 10 minutes, just reflecting on everything. That's what I had to do. Like next week will be a cold shower and I'll be sitting on the floor holding my knees. But
no, this is so depressing.
No, Marnie. No. And I stood in the shower and I was just like, what am I doing?
What is our life? Honestly, we're sitting here talking about North Melbourne on the podcast of just last night.
So look.
I'm so sorry. I've actually lost the plot.
No, this is the road content people need, Marnie, because we're reflecting all the fans' thoughts. I guarantee at least 50% of the fan base had a shower last night and just reflected on their lives.
Everyone comment their shower thoughts.
Yeah, comment your shower thoughts below. That would be fantastic.
Oh,
so,
God, I'm so sad.
I felt pretty rubbish after this one. Yeah. And the reason why is because they gave me hope. And what I'm reeling is realizing.
Wait, hold on. Hope after last week or the first quarter?
The first quarter. I went into this game thinking we're probably going to lose, but I think there's a chance.
Yeah.
And there was. And then there wasn't. So I really felt like we could have done something in this game. Obviously, kicking a goal 3 seconds after the siren went in the first quarter wasn't good and lots of things like that. But I'm realizing the hard bit about being a North Melbourne supporter right now, Marnie, is the easy times are when we're down by 70. The harder times are when we're down by like 18 points and there's a chance because my body doesn't cope very well with this stress.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt after the St Kilda game last week. And that's why I was so angry after that game because I actually think that we were our own worst enemies in that St Kilda game. And had we actually just been able to tighten up our possession a little bit, cleaner possession, just kind of go, you know, that extra 5 to 10%, maybe we would have actually been in that game. Whereas last night it kind of just felt like, and I think we've seen it a number of times this year before, after the first quarter, we obviously came out all guns blazing. The pressure game was up. Our pressure gauge was elite, according to Box Footy in that first quarter. And then it just completely dropped off. And I think you're sitting there and thinking, well, what is it about North that we can't sustain that pressure and that kind of game for a full four quarters? Because it kind of felt like, unfortunately, yesterday felt a bit different. At times this season, I felt like we've kind of come in and out of games, right? Mm. And we've managed to kind of, we've started strong and then we've kind of died out, but then we've kind of been able to push ourselves back up again. That's kind of how we were last week, right? Yeah. Whereas last night it kind of felt like first quarter was unbelievable and then the Suns kind of took it up a notch in the second quarter and then it just kind of felt like we never really recovered after and we kind of just
went
missing.
And after halftime, we sort of, it was one of the worst.
And I get that the conditions in Darwin probably aren't...
Both teams are playing in the same conditions.
...aren't friendly and exactly. And I know we're so used to playing under the roof at Marvel or we're playing down in Tassie, but...
It's no excuse.
You've kind of just... I mean, there's only so much these excuses are going to be able to carry you. So I felt and I still feel really sad.
It was deflating. It was super, super deflating. But I think it was because they gave us that little – that. Let's talk about the first quarter then.
It was good.
It was very good.
It was really good.
Imagine if football was only 20 minutes long. We'd be so good.
We'd probably be undefeated, to be honest.
That's a lie. We were down at quarter time. But anyway, we should have been up though because Paul Curtis and LDU combined for, a decent bit of play, which led to Paul Curtis strolling in the goal. I know he didn't know the time on the clock.
That was kind of summed up North.
As a fan, watching that time tick down and knowing that he doesn't know and he didn't kick the ball, LDU should have picked it up and just snapped it. He made the right decision, but knowing the time, that was the angriest I got in the game.
It kind of does summarize North.
Yeah.
In like one passage of play, that is literally North Melbourne.
The build-up is kind of looking okay and the execution wasn't quite enough.
No, it wasn't exactly what we needed.
But other than that, we came out – the thing we've sort of been trying to do a little bit more since the Cats game, I guess, where like kick short, like short kicks, marking, possession. And I thought it was great. We hit more targets on the lead and open players for marks in that first quarter than I reckon we did the entire season. I did say that to you, didn't I? Then I followed up with not a real stat. But it felt like it. Like it was fluid. We were hitting targets through the corridor and at the wing.
Yeah.
Like switching the play and finding an open man and overlapping and things like that. Man, it just shows how bad we can be because when I watch other teams play and I see them with a guy running past and they handball it off or they kick it into the middle and there's no one in the shot, I'm like, oh my God, where's the ball going? And I'm used to seeing it get turned over.
Yeah.
But then the other team just hits open players and they get into their forward line. We were doing that and I'm like, this is great.
Football really is actually quite simple when you think about it. And, one of the comments that I made to you last night and I, kind of wanted to talk about today is that we overpossess the ball very often to a point where we put our players under unnecessary pressure, which forces us to turn the ball over. Mm. And unfortunately, our skill level just isn't at that point yet where we can, do these fancy things and, bob in and out of traffic and, we're just not there yet. So we need to simplify the game to suit us and to suit where our skill level is at and something that we're capable of. I know it sounds really grim, but that's kind of the reality. And in the first quarter, that's exactly what we did. So after quarter time, I don't know, it was obviously, due to the Suns' pressure and they kind of stepped it up a little bit. But it really doesn't have to be that complicated. It's that kick mark game. It is, when you do have a bit of space, then you could sort of link up with a handball chain. And then, when you execute it well into the forward 50, it's also quite amazing what can happen. So that game and that first quarter really kind of showed that, footy is actually pretty simple. And I think that we just don't do ourselves any favours. I mean,
no,
there is no need to, put ourselves under the sort of pressure that we do.
Yeah, we always find ourselves under pressure. It's like numbers around the contest, we always end up, you know, with one or two less men around the ball.
Well, that's a work rate thing, I think, as well.
And then it'll be a story of the game, like it's been a story of the last 2 or 3 years, where there's so many blind kicks and hack kicks forward, which we'll talk about a bit later. But, you know, it's we are our own worst enemies. We get ourselves – how many handballs last night went to a player that had someone right on their back?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Because we had no other option, though.
No. Let's keep it more positive for the first quarter, because this is probably the only quarter that could be really positive. let's talk about Zach Fisher.
Yeah, he started. He played really well yesterday. I think yesterday was probably his best game for North.
Yep. Died off in the second half a little bit, but his overall body of work for the game was really, really good.
He did.
Clean with the ball and, 34 touches in the end. Had 24 at half time though. But they probably put someone on to tag him because he was
actually just so damaging.
Yeah, he was.
We were using him as an avenue outside of the defensive 50. And I think that a player of his skill, I came on here last week and I sort of said that I was really disappointed in his game last week and kind of where he'd been up until that point. And I think that's fair criticism. And in response to last week, he's come out and had the best game.
Some say he listened to the Further North podcast.
I mean, who wouldn't want to listen to the Further North podcast?
Zach Fisher,
right?
Definitely does.
But that's exactly, I think, on reflection now, that criticism is fair because he comes out last night and shows exactly what he's capable of. Yeah, he definitely – it felt like we were kind of using him as that avenue to exit the defense.
As we should. That's what we brought him in
and
to do.
Exactly. And he made smart choices. You know, he's a pretty good decision maker under pressure. So I really enjoyed – I mean, his first half in particular, I thought he played really, really well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I thought he was fantastic. Like just how often he was around the ball involved and everything his disposal was really good. It's those short chip kicks. Look, I wasn't as critical last week of Zach Fisher. I know he got 9 turnovers and all that sort of stuff. The thing I'm thinking of, and I can't remember from last week, were his turnovers long kicks down the line and it led to intercepts, because I don't know how much I count those as a turnover, or was he directly like butchering the ball? I'm not too sure. The difference with this game is his long kicks down the line were to the advantage side of players, and his short kicks through the middle of the ground to a leading player hit their targets.
It's
nice to see some uncontested marks and just players leading.
Yeah.
Speaking of players leading, Jaden Stevenson turned up.
Yeah.
He listened to the Further North podcast.
He definitely listened to
the preview podcast and saw my shock and awe when I realized he's actually still in the team, when I didn't realize in my overall analysis of the team. And then 10 minutes later, I was like, oh, Jaden Stevenson.
Well, incredible now. I mean, what a difference a week can make. He's probably kept his spot now.
He has to. Absolutely.
I thought he was our only multiple goal kicker, I think. He was very lively last night. He was sort of creating opportunities. He was getting himself in the right position and he was sort of following up his efforts. And I think that's sort of what he's in the side.
He was getting into
do.
Space and stuff as well. Like leading from the forward line out to the wings, taking marks along the wing, using a bit
lively.
Of his pace, using a bit of his skills and things like that. And there was the kick to Paul Curtis in the pocket as well, just placed perfectly.
Yeah.
So I'm so conflicted, Marnie, because do I trust him to come out and do it again? Not really, but I really hope he does, because he was really, really good. He was really, really good.
But I think that's kind of what you've got to do. I mean, you could sit here and the side and what we've been delivering week in, week out has been really inconsistent in and of itself. And there's very few players who I could sit here and say they've had a very good season on the whole, right? And so at the end of the day, you've kind of got to use what you've got, and it's the same discussion we have with Aiden Corr. Can you trust him to back up the performance against St Kilda last week? Can you trust Jaden Stevenson now to play Essendon and deliver? You kind of have to. And I think that trust and that sort of backing those players in and supporting them week in, week out, whether people like it or not, that's actually what's going to help them improve.
Yeah, no, I
giving
I
them a bit of continuity, giving them an opportunity just to sort of, you know, work their way back into the game and back into form.
Yeah,
that's kind of what you've got to do in order for them to improve.
Yeah.
And so I really liked his game. And we know he's talented. Mm. And a lot of the commentary around it is, oh, he'd probably be better off in a good – he'd be better in a good team. Most people would be, let's be honest. And so just put the onus back on him. Say, all right, we'll give you a run of games. And now you've just got to make of it what you can.
As a response, like Fisher from last week and Stevenson from last week, I'm really happy with their efforts. And I think, you know, two of the better ones on the ground for sure. But another one I'm going to talk about, Marnie. My favourite guy, my favourite man, Charlie Condon. Now,
Charlie.
I don't know if Charlie Condon's the best defender in the league or not, but I think he might be. Now, that's a joke.
No, he literally is the best defender in the league. Sorry, Sam Taylor, step aside.
Who even is Stephen May? No idea. Never heard of him because we've got Charlie Combin. He's so good. Like, there's another point here I'll throw in with this so we don't go back to Charlie Combin later, even though I could talk about him all podcast. I'm terrified every time he like hits the ground and grabs his shoulder. It's 2 weeks in a row that he's like grabbed his shoulder and looks like it's dislocated.
Yeah.
His shoulder, his facial expression made me think his shoulder was out in like Craigieburn or something. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
In a different postcode.
Yeah.
But he played the rest of the game, which was good. The intercept marks on this man, the strength in the contest. Yes, Jed Walter pushed him out a couple of times. He'll learn that sort of stuff, but he just marks everything that comes near him, and he has to be the staple of our defence. I know we've got defenders coming back with Logue. I know Core played decent. Callan Dawson, apparently he's 2 week injuries now, 12 week injury.
Yeah, that's also ridiculous.
He needs to be the pillar, and we can't throw him forward. He needs to be the one that stays there all the time. I'd rather throw Callan Dawson forward than
I don't think that's happening now. I think
I agree.
We did it once out of sheer desperation against Hawthorn, and I don't think that's going to happen again.
No, he just needs to be there every second of every game, and he needs to be our pillar in defence for a decade.
It is just incredible the way that he's been able to kind of turn his career around in such a short amount of time. And Charlie, you know, last year
he showed signs.
He did show signs and, you know, about he was kind of doing everything but kicking goals. Yeah. And I said that on the pod last year and, you know, he was having a crack and he was definitely, you know, presenting up the ground. He's got a good set of hands and we know that. Mm. But to be able to take those skills and then transform it, going back into defence and having such an incredible impact in such a short amount of time. I couldn't be prouder of him. And I'm so
ripping
chuffed.
Bloke too.
Yeah. I mean, he's just such, you know, he's a friend and I could talk about it all day as well. I'm really proud of him and what he's been able to kind of do in the last sort of 5 weeks.
Yeah, I think the one thing you can take from Charlie Combin, and there's multiple players like this, we as a fan base scream out for effort and intent. And there's a group of players in this team that you know are going to give that every week.
Yeah.
You're like Jackson Archer, which we'll come to, is another one where regardless of if he does make mistakes or anything like that, you know his heart is in it and his head is there to win for the club.
Fall down 9 times, get up 10 sort of thing.
And there's a lot of players in this team that don't have that right now. And even if some players maybe don't perform as well on the day, if you can tell their intent is to win that ball and they care about this club, you need to keep those guys in the team, I believe, at this stage when we are searching for players who care about the jumper and that
Absolutely.
Sort of stuff.
Absolutely, because at the end of the day, that's going to will you – you know, talent is only going to get you so far.
Oh, no, I couldn't agree. That is the most true statement anyone's ever said.
You know, I'll just sort of deviate here for a second. I don't know if you've read Boomer Harvey's autobiography.
I have not.
Okay, so I've read it, and for those who have read it.
I didn't know he had one.
It's actually a really, really interesting read. Definitely recommend. But he sort of spoke about him and his brother Shane Harvey.
I was going to ask, is there Shane Harvey content?
Yeah,
that will get
so
me there.
So Shane Harvey went as a top 10, as I think it was a pick 11.
Was he really?
Went to Essendon. Yeah, he was a first round draft pick. And he never made it because I just don't think his heart was really in it. But Boomer said on talent, he was definitely, as in Shane was definitely the more talented of them, but Boomer's work ethic, his routine and his effort and his professionalism is the reason why he played 432
Think about like
games.
A Jack Watts or Tom Boyd and all those sort of players.
These guys are talented, but
their heart's not in it.
It's the same with Sean. Like Sean Higgins was one of the most, like up with Boomer, the two most professional footballers I've ever seen play.
This is why Petrarca's so good. You can see, I know he puts out a lot of social media content. And this is why we get a little bit more of an insight, but you can tell that guy is the most professional footballer ever.
The standards.
The conditioning he goes through and like the standards he sets for himself. That's why I think he's probably the best midfielder in the league at the moment. And I don't know, that's the level you have to go to. And if a few of our players, and we don't know what they do on the inside, so I don't want to speculate on individuals or anything, but like, you know, I just feel like if a few of our players' hearts were in it a little bit more and their dedication was there a little bit more, we could be better as a team. I also don't blame some of the players though. If you've been on this list for 6 years, you know, why your heart maybe isn't in it when you've had so little success. If there's no stimulation in your job, any job for anybody, if there's no stimulation in it, I can understand why the heads can drop a little bit, but you get paid to compensate for that. And that's sort of your thing, is you have to
it's
be.
It's also like, this is not a regular job. This is not a 9 to 5. No, like I know. The average person does. This is your career. This is a lifestyle. And at the end of the day, like, you pull on that jumper every single week. Like, this is who you represent. Mm. Like, you've got to. And I think the thing with some of the players is that there's this debate around effort and care factor.
Yeah.
These players have the ability to make the change.
Yes.
They can drive
That's
the change.
Why they're in the league.
So step up and take a bit of ownership and drive the change.
We've had too much sporadic stepping up. You know what I mean? Like, 1 week, like Wardlaw's a great example of this. And I thought Wardlaw was decent yesterday, not as good as last week. But Wardlaw, I don't know if I can think of him having like 3 really solid games in a row.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We just need consistency with the effort. And if we can get players stepping up and then maintaining that, that's when our side goes up the ladder. But until we get that, for like 3 years, we've gone, there's the Wardlaw game, there's the Comben game, there's Aiden Corr's good game, oh, he's not good again. And everyone's all over the place. We just don't unite and all, you know, have those games and that consistency together.
This is why I love Eddie Ford, and this is why I think we desperately need to bring him back.
Yeah.
He's, and I've said this a few times now, I said it like, his best and worst is not very different.
No, I agree. I agree.
He constantly shows up week in, week out. You know what you're going to get. You're going to get a couple goals. You're going to get, you know, 10 to 15 touches, and you know he's always going to have an impact and he's always going to play his role. Mm. We need more players like that. Yeah. And that's someone who cares. Mm.
You know what I mean?
So I just, yeah, I wish more players would kind of look at the opportunity that they've got and sort of take it with both hands and sort of step up and drive the change rather than cracking the shits that, you know, we're sitting here, you know, winless after 9 rounds and, you know, throwing your hands up in the air, because that's not really going to help anybody.
I think by the end of the first quarter, we should have probably been up by a few goals. We missed some sitters. Second quarter we'll come to, but I think we had a chance to be leading by a few goals at quarter time. And
imagine that, what that would have done for the confidence.
Yeah. Second quarter starts, they kick 2 goals in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And we go, here we go again.
Yeah.
That was the most typical North Melbourne second quarter I've ever seen. The pressure basically went to zero. It's crazy to see how that sort of stuff happens. When you have a first quarter like that, what in that little 15-minute, 10-minute gap in the middle of the quarters changes? I understand the Gold Coast changed some things so our short kick and possession game wasn't there. But it's crazy how we can still keep our heads in those moments to not let all of that stuff happen. Well, we need to be able to adjust as
like,
well.
In what? Like, it kind of just feels like, okay, we've done a really great job in the first quarter, so we can just sort of like take the foot off the – like, in what world can North Melbourne take the foot off the accelerator?
I don't know.
I don't know, but I'm not living in that world.
It happens so frequently, it can't just be coincidence.
It's so
Do you know what
weird.
I mean? Like, every game goes the same.
It's got to be a mindset thing, because –
But the heads are going to drop though, because think about – what these players have been through, even the last year and a half. They've won 3 games in like 18 months, and most of them probably weren't there for 1 or 2 of them. So it's like, I can fully understand why they would be like, here we go again. But it's on them not to do that.
Yeah, and it happens so – it kind of unravels so quickly.
So quickly.
It's so weird, and I can't put my finger on it because – and I said this to you just before we jumped on air. Last night kind of felt a bit different because – this season, I feel like, you know, we've had patches of really good football, and then maybe the opposition's kind of come over the top for a quarter, a half, and then we've kind of been able to build our way back up and re-steady the ship, and, you know, most of the time sort of finish off strongly. Whereas last night, it kind of felt like after the first quarter, the Suns came out in the second quarter, completely overwhelmed us within the first 10 minutes, and then we could just never recover. Like, it actually felt like last night, for the first time, we never really recovered. And I think that's what's so sad is like, why?
Yeah, we were really lucky not to be – they could have had a 9-goal quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, they were on like 4 goals, 12 or something like that.
Yeah, they couldn't hit it.
Yeah, they couldn't hit the target at all. So we could have been looking at a much worse defeat, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
But we could have been down by – 50 probably in that second quarter.
Yeah.
A few things maybe from that quarter, which I think things were standing out. We'll talk a little bit about LDU now, because I think that second quarter, I don't know, it was an amalgamation of everything that's been negative with LDU this year. We'll talk about his second half as well at the same time. But his last couple of weeks have been very good, much better. But those the first month or so of football that he played, I think us as a fan base were saying, what's going on with LDU? Yeah. Why isn't he his electric best? You know, he had a full preseason. He's played every game. His injuries haven't reoccurred this year. LDU has this laziness about him this year, which I really have never seen in him before.
Yeah.
And it's hard as a fan not to point it to he's checked out. I don't necessarily believe that, but I wouldn't completely write it off. I'm not saying he's fully checked out, but are the players' heads, some of these players' heads who have been here for 5 or 6 years in this football club right now? And my heart tells me maybe not. I understand it because, once again, if you've been in a workplace for 5 years and you've had minimal success, I get it. But your job is to represent the club.
Yeah.
LDU was a player yesterday. I think he may be one of the softest players in the entire league. Refuses to chase, tackle. There was a moment, was it the second quarter we talked about before, where Witts kicked a goal out of the ruck in the forward pocket and he had an opportunity to smother, put a body on, lay a tackle, and he just stood there and like winced at the ball when it went over his head for a goal. That was the worst half of football I've ever seen him play. Everything he touched was a turnover, was a fumble, was a miss kick. And the lack of effort defensively, if it's not clicking on the offensive side of the ball, you tackle and you chase and you do the intangibles, you do the one percenters. I saw a stat today. He averages 0.9 one percenters for the season or something like that.
It's
or
not great.
It was either that or pressure axe or one of those. But
his intent isn't there. He's definitely a one-way runner. I think part of it, and I'm not gonna defend him because his first half yesterday was pretty poor. But we spoke after the game and I said to you, I thought LDU was in our best last night. And I said that the reason why I thought that is in the second half when it seemed like just about every player had really dropped off. And I don't know if it was a combination of exhaustion, the heat, not fit enough, just, you know, cue in the rack sort of thing. But he kind of looked like he was the only one doing anything and he kind of looked like he was doing it on his own. He was the one winning the ball out of the middle. He was trying to create something. You know, he was trying to generate a bit of play. And, you know, he's a superstar, right? He has the ability to be a superstar. And we need players like that who can generate play for us and who can get the ball moving forward, who can win it out of the middle, who can create opportunity, who can be a bit of a spark and a bit of a live wire. And I think that is LDU. And I think he probably sees himself in that role as well. So whether that is the reason why we don't see him maybe tackling or, and I'm not saying it's a good thing because this mindset, and again, it's all conspiracy, but this mindset is what's going to separate him from be able to take that next step and actually to be that superstar, right? Is that it's all well and good. You win the ball out of the middle of the ground. You're the one trying to create opportunities. You're the one trying to move the ball forward. I get it. But if you're not tackling, if you're not following up with second and third efforts, because he had so he had 35 touches and 9 turnovers yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's not great.
No, you look at his stats, and this was classic LDU in the first month. You look at his stats and you go, wow, what a game. 35 touches, a bunch of clearances, inside 50s, all that sort of stuff. But it's what he does with those. And this is where we did disagree. We had a very emotional discussion. I know I was emotional. Yeah, I was trying to convince us to talk about this tomorrow because I'm going to be mad. I didn't think his second half was very good. I completely agree with you that yes, his effort on the offensive side of the ball was way better in the second half. And he was one of the ones that was trying to do it on his own. But everything he still did led to nothing and led to a turnover, a miss kick, you know, an intercept mark, and not making the right decision. He was better in the second half, but from that first half and still the lack of effectiveness in the second half, I could never put him anywhere near best on the ground for me. He needs to be better than that. And if we're going to talk about him like he can be a star, then he has to show it and he's not right now.
But then this is where we need to also find the cattle to support him because Powell was fine.
I think we have that though. But
do we? Because I thought Powell was quite good last night as well, but his disposal probably wasn't that effective. Will Phillips, pretty ordinary.
I thought Wilfie was pretty solid.
He was fine.
He was fine. Yeah, he was fine. I'm not saying he was good.
But he probably, like, these players, though, aren't probably, like, giving LDU the support that he needs. Like I said, in that second half, he kind of looked like he was at it on his own.
I don't disagree with that. I think, though, then that leads to having another conversation about, like, getting more midfielders and things like that. And I think I've been screaming for Hugh Greenwood to play in the midfield. And I think Hugh Greenwood – and people can have their opinions on Hugh Greenwood. We'll talk about Hugh in a second because Marnie's got something to say. But the criticism of Hugh Greenwood is by people who I feel like just don't really watch the football or don't like – that's a big statement – but like who don't see the little 1% of things and just maybe want people to be more flashy.
Well,
and
I just think people need to figure out what they want from our players, because we're sitting 100%. Here and saying
– like LDU should have a higher standard – sorry to interrupt – but like no, LDU should have a much higher standard than Hugh Greenwood. Hugh Greenwood did what he needed to do. You look at his stats, you look at his game, did he get 30 touches and clearances? No, but you know –
he's like, not in the side to do that though.
No, but I really believe that if you put him in the midfield, literally to get his head over the ball, hand ball out to LDUs, to Wardlaws, to Powers, and if their disposal can't be mediocre, I think that kind of solves our problem. Is Hugh Greenwood a long-term option? No. I really believe we need a big midfield bull, which is terrifying because we should have drafted enough midfielders and we need another one, which is gross because we just need to draft key position players now and we probably won't. But you know, there are different levels for different players. And the reason LDU – I'm not saying LDU was bad because he was one of the worst on the ground, but what we expect him to do and what he should be doing with his level and his the money he's probably on and his talent needs to be way better than that. Hugh Greenwood is a 32-year-old player who's at the twilight of his career that can bring toughness, hard ball gets, clean handball and tackling. And that's what he did. He doesn't need to do more than that. He doesn't need to get the ball on the outside of the pack, run, spear it to Larky's chest. That's not his job. LDU does need to do that. Powell needs to do that. There's different levels for different players. A guy like Hugh played his role, I believe. It's no coincidence when you say 11 inside 50 tackles this week compared to none.
Yeah.
What a surprise. Hugh Greenwood's in the team and we get more
playing
tackles.
Playing in the forward line, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't think he's a good forward. I don't think he's going to kick any goals. That's why I kind of believe he should. Sorry, I know that makes your eye twitch a little bit. But I just think if he could do what he did in the forward line with pressure in the midfield, I think that levels up our midfield a lot.
Yeah.
So anyway, you go because I talked a lot just
now. No, all I was going to say is I think people need to kind of take a step back and think about what they want, because the criticism of LDU, a lot of the criticism of LDU last night was that he just doesn't look like he cares. He looks like he's checked out, whatever, and he doesn't bring enough effort. That's not good enough for people. Then someone like Hugh Greenwood, who is all heart, all effort, comes in, plays
tackles,
his role.
Pressure.
He's not someone that is going to set the world on fire. That's not what he's in the side to do. That's also not good enough for people.
Yeah.
So I think people just need to take a step back, figure out what they want from these players, and then make an assessment on the back of that. Like I said, I think that LDU's second half was much better last night. I did think that he finished the game maybe in our better players because of the intention and what he was trying to do. But I just think that overall it probably wasn't good enough. That first half was pretty costly.
But it wasn't good enough when we were in the game. And
no,
I think
exactly.
that's the thing. Like he had a chance. If he could have maybe been a bit better with his disposal, we could have had those extra three or four goals on the Gold Coast by halftime, quarter time especially, you know?
And the other thing I just want to say as well is that showing the door to any player that looks like they're checked out or disinterested probably isn't the answer either. I think the club really needs to find a way to keep the players engaged and to keep the players' care factor up despite how poor the start to the season has been. You look at a team like Melbourne or you look at a team like Carlton, right? Like both of those teams spent a very long period of time down the bottom of the ladder, yet they were able to keep guys like Petrarca, Oliver for the D's or Max Gorn for the D's or Sam Walsh, Patrick Cripps. Patrick Cripps took a pay cut to stay at Carlton. You know what I mean? Like there's got to be a way that we can build the culture and the club internally to a point where players don't want to leave, because we've never really as – North has never really faced an issue of player retention up until now. I think this is the first time I've genuinely seen us in a position in the whole 20-odd years I've been supporting the club where we've actually struggled potentially to keep players. We obviously lost Goldie and Ben Mackay last year. We lost Horn Francis the year before that. It looks as if potentially there's rumours around LDU and Zerha maybe not being there next season. showing the daughter players who we can actually build the future around because they look like they're disengaged or they look like they don't want to be there, I don't think is really – that should be the last resort. I think the club's kind of got to look internally and figure out a way for us to be able to keep these players engaged and to keep them caring and to kind of show them that they are going to be a really integral part of building the future back up of this football club because Carlton's done it and Melbourne's done it and it looks like Essendon maybe are starting to do it as well, right? Yeah. And I think that we've got to find a way to do that so these guys do buy into what we can be in the next 3 to 5 years
I think like,
on the back of them leading the charge.
Yeah, I think this is why we brought in Alistair Clarkson though. And the criticism of Clarkson is ridiculous. I understand, like on the field, I get it, right? You can criticise Alistair Clarkson 100%. For his tactic and that sort of stuff. We need to build the culture of this football club from zero again because that's what it is right now. There's guys like Larky, Sheasel, Wardlaw in there that I genuinely believe care about this club. But culturally and a winning culture, it's at zero right now and we need to rebuild that. That takes years. And this is kind of what I've been saying last few weeks is as fans, we really need to understand that this is going to be a really long process. Yeah. We're not going to be out of the bottom four next year. We're probably not out of the bottom four the year after. But it's going to be a 3 to 5 year thing where we rebuild the culture. We've rebuilt all of the staff and the management. They set the culture. The culture will change. The right players will stay. They're more motivated. We move up the ladder. I think that's the process it's going to be. We just need to be patient with that. And as fans, it's hard because we go to work every day. We spend our money on watching North Melbourne. We're emotionally invested. You know, we're not getting paid like those guys are and that sort of stuff. And I understand it from that point of view as well. But we have to look at it from a point of view of this is where we're at. If we like it or not, it's where we're at. If we like it or not, we're going to love and support this club anyway. So we need to find a way to keep our heads while we're going through this. And it's 3 to 5 years. I'm telling you, we're not getting better next year. We might improve a little bit. We're not going to be making a jump up the ladder or anything like that. And you know what? In 10 years' time, if we're pushing for finals or in the finals and we look stable, I don't care. Do you reckon Melbourne fans right now think about the 2000s? No. They think about they won the premiership, they're in the finals, it's football's fun again. And that's the stuff that we need to do. So anyway, we're going to go to some voice messages right now.
Great idea.
And before I go on another motivational tangent, Marnie, because that's my thing. Another call to arms by me throughout the week.
Josh, the ever inspiration.
Yes, 100%. I'll lead this pack from the front.
Thanks to everyone who sent their voice memos in, by the way. We do play them every single week on the pod. After every game, just send your thoughts and feelings and emotions for thenorthpod@gmail.com. We'll see you on the other side of these.
See you soon.
I genuinely think this club is beyond fixing. Everyone says it'll turn quickly, but we've never seen a team this bad ever. Ever. I am almost at the point I would rather see us fold.
When is expected, let's extend that Comben contract because God, do we need him. And there was some effort from some little guys, but like, it just wasn't there and the skill errors. Oh my God.
Hey Josh, hey Marnie. We play the Gold Coast in round 17 at Marvel Stadium. I'm really worried it could be the lowest crowd ever at that stadium if we keep dishing up this shit.
Marnie, I'm not going to ask you to tell me how the voice messages were, but can you just give me a ranking out of 10 for how good those voice messages were?
They're always a 10 out of 10. We have the best listeners in town.
Well, well handled. okay, we're not going to talk about the second half too much. It was just a really lackluster, bad display of football, and we don't really want to have to go through that. There was just – you could tell the heads sort of dropped and they sort of knew what was coming.
Just sort of started to teeter off.
Yeah, the players were also completely gassed. So – not an excuse. You're an AFL footballer. You should be fit enough to get through that, but also the conditions were rubbish.
I do just want to talk about one player who was completely gassed and I really thought just was a little warrior for that second half. Not so little. My guy, Aiden Corr.
Yeah.
He battled so hard last night. Played a solid game. Definitely backed up his performance from last week. Didn't really have the wow factor game that I thought he had last week, but he battled really, really hard. You know, he got a knock to the face and he had blood just streaming down his face at one point and like did not get off the ground for about 5 minutes. No one picked it up. It was like literally everywhere and it was so obvious. But you know, in the last quarter, there was a couple of passages of play where the ball came into the Suns forward 50, and you just see Core like just really, you can barely lift his legs, and he's just still trying until the very end. So shout out Aiden Core. It's incredible what can happen when you play the man to his strengths. That 1-2 punch with him and Comben in the back line last night. Walter and King definitely did get on top. Not, you know.
Walter's a hard one because Walter's stats look all right, but there was a kick out of midair in the goal square. You know, I don't think he really like, I think Comben was better than Jed Walter. I know the stats don't suggest that. But
I think part of being a good player is having that footy sense and being able to get in the right positions.
He produced, I don't think Comben was outplayed.
I think Core and Comben were better last week than they were this week. I think the Suns' key forwards definitely got a little bit more on top than St Kilda did last week. But I do think that it was a tick from me.
I think that kind of
combo again this week.
Yeah, as a duo this week, yes. It is going to be very interesting when Logue comes back and Dawson's fit again, because I think we all agree as a fan base, maybe Core isn't in that best defensive combination. But I think if he keeps performing, you know, like he did on the weekend, you're not going to be able to drop him. And I'm not sure what – you know, I've been hard on Aiden Core. I got roasted last week for my Aiden Core opinions.
Thanks everyone for your support. Made up for that
with some brilliant Photoshop work.
That was very
Marnie
good.
With Aiden Core being the Kingslayer.
That was good. I loved that so much.
That was my present to Aiden Core to say I apologize, even though I don't think everything I said was wrong. But look, yes, I went in hard. For the future, and this is my main point with Aiden Core, as we know, and I know it's an individual game thing, but with the future, I'd still feel better about a Logue, Dawson, Comben backline.
Yeah, I agree.
And I know
you
agree with that. Yeah. But like, isn't that the point of the whole team right now, is to play what we think the future is? And that's what I find hard. If he performs like that, I guess I don't really care which way they go. But, you know, thinking of long term, I wouldn't want to play. This isn't meant to be singular Aiden Core, because I think he had a good game. But like playing an Aiden Core who's maybe not going to be here in a couple of years, and maybe you restrict a Dawson or a Logue getting back to form. I'm just not sure what the combination of defense is going to be when all those guys are available. It'd be very
interesting. I think it's a problem that we've, you know, it's a discussion for when, you know, one or both of them do become
Aiden
available.
Aiden Core could play full forward. Who knows?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Coleman medalist Aiden Core.
Oh no. Okay. That's good. That's enough.
This is what
culture.
My dreams are made of. Okay, anyway, let's move on.
A couple of points from the game I think I'll make here before we go into like maybe some of the best and the players we want to more from. We got 30 plus marks. I can't remember the exact number, but it was maybe 34, but like 30 plus marks in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And we ended with 73 for the entire game. And it just shows Dimmer as a coach can make a tactical change and they respond.
Yeah.
You know, and they execute. And we don't even have the ability to do that. But it was disappointing the way they were able to take away our game, and we clearly had no plan B, and that's when it just fell off into old North Melbourne. We got the ball, kick the ball as far as you can and don't look, and that's, you know, where my criticism of maybe an LDU and a power comes from. But
yeah.
It's crazy how well we start and how easy it is to rattle us and put us off our game completely. And it does frustrate me that a coach of Clarkson's quality doesn't seem to be able to have a plan B and C. And if plan A isn't working, not even being able to make tweaks. I still trust Clarkson. Clarkson criticism is wild and the dude is safe for at least the next couple of years. But I don't know. It's very concerning how we can't seem to adjust to the game.
I think these things take time. I mean, realistically, we're only 9 rounds into the season and it's definitely something that, you know, I think we need to build on. I also think that we kind of need to back ourselves in a little bit better. I think the players need to back their ability. I think they need to trust themselves to be able to execute and hold their nerve over a four-quarter period.
There's a lot of time
where
we're in space as well and we just make the wrong choice.
Yes.
Like LDU breaking away from a pack and has a little bit more time and just thinks, I'm just going to hack this thing forward.
We put ourselves under unnecessary pressure sometimes. I think I think sometimes we don't think we have as much time or space
as we do.
Actually do, yeah, and then other times it's the other way. We think we have more time or more space than we do.
That happened a lot last night too. A lot of players receiving the ball, and we're like Zerhar and LDU did this, and there was other players that did it as well. Then there was sort of jogging going, all right, I'm going to find the option here. And they're like, there's a guy right on you, mate. And we got holding the ball so many times. It's game awareness as well. But I mean, there's the list of things we could be doing better is gargantuan. So we're not going to go through all of
those. Let's talk about those holding the ball decisions.
Well, yeah, let's go umpires then.
The umpiring was awful last night.
Shocking, wasn't
it? And I just want to say something before we go into the umpiring. The umpiring did not determine the outcome of the game.
No.
And I'm not going to sit here and say that it did. But North can play badly. We can be unfit. We can lack skill. We can lack effort and intensity. But the umpiring can also be bad at the same time. Like all of these things can be true at the same time.
I mean, 25 to 14 free kicks is a pretty massive disparity. And
it
I think
was also just the amount of free kicks that weren't paid, particularly the holding the ball. There was a lot of holding the ball decisions that did not go North's way but did go the Gold Coast way. And I don't want to sit here and make this like a pity party for North, okay? We've got a string of problems and umpiring isn't the biggest issue that we do have. But, you know, our pressure game was so good and we were so on in that first quarter. So when you come out in the second quarter and you're tackling and you're ferocious and there are holding the ball decisions that go unpaid, that's pretty discouraging. You're not going to want to keep doing it for it to go kind of, you know.
It's reward for effort, isn't it? And
absolutely.
I think that's the thing that's hard is like with a young team, you need to have reward for effort.
100%.
And that is what will spur you on to do that again in the next contest. Now, I believe maybe a player like an Archer, like a Comben, like a Greenwood is not going to worry about that. They're going to do that every single time. But for other players, they need that reward. And it's really tough. Like, you know, if the umpiring was consistent all the way where the ball was a bar of soap, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be so many times the players are dropping the ball. If they called holding the ball every time someone dropped the ball, there would be a stoppage every 6 seconds last night. But it was almost like they were playing that game or the umpires were umpiring that way for us. But every time you know, we dropped the ball, then it was holding the ball. But every time Gold Coast would throw the ball over their heads or drop the ball after getting tackled or something like that, you know, there was no reward for effort and a free kick there. And I just don't understand, you know, the thing to remember, and this might be a wild statement and I don't know if I believe this or not, but just to throw something out there, you look at like soccer and in the bigger leagues, they need to have umpires that are from a different country or have been known not to support teams and things like that. I'm not saying the umpires and I hate North and they're not doing it. That's not what my point is here. My point is, you know, they're human beings. They're Australians. They're getting caught up in North is bad. They're reading the paper and seeing how bad North Melbourne is as a club and how pathetic we are and Clarkson isn't good and the players are rubbish. I just don't think it's good for umpires to know how bad we are because I think it's easy to pay free kicks against us and get a...
I wouldn't question umpires' professionalism like
that. I'm not saying it's because of their professionalism. I think subconsciously it's easy to pay a free kick against North Melbourne now because we're bad and the scrutiny won't come compared to paying it against the Carlton or something like that. Not singling out Carlton at all in that. I'm not saying the umpires have a bias. That's not at all my point. My point is mainly I just think it's really easy to pay free kicks against North at the moment because we're a bad team and I'd like to see that gap narrowed a little bit because I feel like that's what happened a lot last night.
I do think that we are a little bit undisciplined and I think that we probably do get frustrated.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, Jaden Stevenson gave away a stupid 50-metre free kick, again, probably out of frustration in the last quarter. But I do think that on the flip side, when the tackling is there and when, you know, they are holding the ball decisions, that's the one in particular, I think, because that is us tackling and creating something. We need to be rewarded for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of reward for effort, I've got beef with Cam Zerha.
Ah, Zerha beef, yes. Well, okay. Marnie's told me she's got
someone,
beef.
You want to talk about someone or one passage of play?
I don't know what this is, by the way.
Made my night last night.
Yeah.
And Cam Zerha single-handedly ripped my soul from out of my chest, okay? We had 11 tackles inside our forward 50 last night.
Mm.
One of those tackles was to Hugh Greenwood.
Oh, okay.
40 metres out in front of North Melbourne's goal. Hugh Greenwood lays a perfect tackle on the Suns defender.
Yeah.
Okay. It was called holding the ball. As he's tackling this Suns defender, Cam Zerha comes in at the very end and kind of like piles on top with Hugh to kind of solidify that decision. So that's Hugh Greenwood's tackle.
It's Hugh Greenwood's
tackle. So that's Hugh Greenwood's free kick.
It's Hugh Greenwood's free kick.
What the hell is Cam Zerha doing, taking that ball and lining up 40 metres out directly in front? That's Hugh Greenwood's kick. That's Hugh Greenwood's goal.
Now,
Bull has stolen Hugh Greenwood's opportunity for goal. And I'm telling you, Hugh would have slotted that.
Okay. I'm just going to put a message out there to Cam Zerha. If you're listening to this, Cam, you pissed off the wrong girl. I've never seen someone in my life care about an AFL player as much as this. I'm telling you, Christian Petrarca's mother doesn't care about him as much as Marnie cares about Hugh Greenwood.
Is beef. That is serious beef, Cam Zerha. If you are listening,
there's not a tomahawk steak you could cook in the world to make money.
And
forgive
you know what?
You right
I'm
now,
really
Cam.
Proud of you for going back and slotting the goal, but doesn't change the fact that that actually should have been Hugh's goal to begin with. I literally sat there at the end of the game, and that's still all I could think about.
Yeah,
I was so upset.
I saw that happen.
I've never been so upset to see North score a goal than I was in that moment.
Yeah, I saw that happen, and I was like, Marnie is going to be pissed. Because that is Hugh. It was 100%. The first thing I was like is like, why isn't Hugh Greenwood taking that kick? Marnie's going to be so angry. And then what happened? Pops up a message on my phone with Marnie just writing expletives in capital letters. So right on cue, right on Hugh maybe. So yeah, that was pretty wild. That was very funny. But yeah, it should have been Hugh Greenwood's goal. So
absolutely should have been Hugh Greenwood's goal. And yeah.
Okay.
That's all I have to say about
Let's
that.
Let's move on from that because we don't want to make you explode. No volcano on this podcast, all right? Caro's Arrow, we need a segment like that for you every week where you just take a shot at a North player who did something, not because they were bad, but because they stole something from Hugh. Okay, let's go to the best and the worst is the wrong word. So it's categorized best on ground and we wanted more.
Yeah.
Okay, we've talked about a few of these players, so we'll skip over them. George Wardlaw is the one on this list that we haven't spoken about much. Now, was he as good as he was last week? No. This is all about effort, intent, follow-up effort, tackling pressure, and his willingness to put everything into this team and 100%. Into this game. You know, was he as clean? No. Pretty impossible when the ball is a bar of soap. But he does not give up the entire day and he will fight
He's
for this
club.
He's
such a warrior.
We're so in love with George Wardlaw. If I could adopt George and Charlie as my sons, I would right now. I'll send them the paperwork. I don't know if I'll receive anything back. But, man, I love – that was so stupid.
Whoa.
That was a joke. Or was it? I just think this guy is the future of our football club and he sets the standard. This guy can be Petrarca-esque. He can be. He's got it. He's already adding goals to his game. Did he kick one last night or did he kick a point? I can't remember, but I don't know. It's just the effort and intent of this guy. You can teach people skills. You can teach people, you know, how to kick, how to handball. Lots of players have talent. Players don't all have work ethic like we said before. And this guy's work ethic and intent and care and heart is 100%.
Yeah. So I do agree with you.
Nothing more can be said about that. I summed it up perfectly. I love George Wardlaw and I should just do a separate podcast just to talk about George Wardlaw.
Okay, have fun.
Would you listen to it, Marnie?
Yeah, I'd listen to it. I love George Wardlaw. I love you. I love George Wardlaw. It's, you know, what more could you want from a podcast?
100%. We've got Compton on this list. We've spoken about Charlie enough, but fantastic game. We've spoken about Fisher.
Wonderful response from him, and we've spoken about Steve-O as well. I really loved what both of them brought last week, in response to last week in particular. Mm. Can I talk about Archer?
Yes, I want to make a point on Archer as well. So you go and I'm going to make
a
point after.
I just want to say one thing I love about Jackson. I was about to say Glenn Archer. Whoa, oh, Jackson Archer.
I love
Archer.
Glenn Archer, Marnie.
Well, this guy's his son. The resilience.
What?
The resilience of Jackson Archer last night. I was so impressed. I honestly thought late in the second quarter he broke his ankle.
Yeah.
He could barely walk on it. He looked like he was in so much pain. He did end up walking off the ground. On the commentary in the third quarter, they said that apparently the instruction was Arch was going to come back on the ground for about 10 to 15 minutes, test his ankle and see how he went and maybe then sub him off.
Yeah.
He stayed on and he played the rest of the game.
Yeah, and he went at the ball just as hard as he always does.
That is just – you want something – you're talking about effort and intent.
Yeah, 100%.
That is so impressive from such a young guy, you know, in what he was like his 10th game or something like that. Super impressive, the resilience, the effort and the willingness to fight and sort of soldier on. Obviously, if he was injured, I just think that would be a stupid decision to make and I wouldn't encourage that per se. Mm. But I was just so impressed with the way he handled himself in the second half last night.
Yeah, this guy has cemented his spot in this team now. And even if he has a poor game, you keep him in this team for sheer effort and intent alone. If he's healthy, he's in that lineup for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's a lock. Like there's, you know, he brings enough game to game just with his tackle pressure, you know, the ability to like what he did on Mitch Owens last week, I don't know. I just love the way he goes about it. And if everyone, I mean, we said this about Kane Turner, but Jackson Archer actually produces.
Hey, don't trash talk my guy like that.
Sorry, Jack Marnie then. I loved that I called it Marnie's match too, but anyway. And then I said, oh, no, people are going to think it's about Marnie. Anyway.
It's always about me.
Yeah, standard. Pretty standard, just like this podcast. I love Jackson Archer. The one thing about Jackson Archer, which I think he needs to get better at, and it's only because he cares so much, is because there was multiple times last night where his player had the ball. He was running directly at him to try and tackle him. It's very easy when he's going 100 miles an hour, he sort of gets stepped, sort of falls over and misses the tackle. And I think he's very easy to evade like that. And I just want him to maybe be a little bit lighter on his feet and not just always try and kill the bloke when, you know, Brad Hill or someone like that is there who can just take a step, get around him, and then Jackson Archer's sort of out of the play.
Sort of overcommitting himself.
Overcommitting himself to the ball a little bit. That's the only criticism I would have to him, but that he's played like 10 games. So that will come in time.
Definitely.
And you know Glenn at home is going to be like, bloody Jacko, mate, why are you doing that? You know? I love Jackson Archer so much. So that is all.
That's great.
Bailey Scott.
Yeah, he looks to have stepped it up a notch.
What a surprise, Marnie. You play a player in his position.
Wow.
And he's good. Now, I'm no Alistair Clarkson, but I've been calling for this and I believe that my calling for Scott on the wing was the reason Clarkson made the change.
Well, I think the inclusion of Archer has kind of alleviated Scott a little bit.
And Fisher doing what he did.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's been, you know, not back to his brilliant best, but he's definitely had his best two games, Bailey Scott, for the season now that he's back on the wing. Just keep him there. I mean, that's where he's a role player and he's got to play in his position to play the role. The wing role is something that can be incredibly damaging, that can be incredibly dynamic and can be a great asset to the game. And we've got someone who has the potential, I think, to be one of the best wingmen in the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the start of the year, I said he would be my surprise All-Australian. I really believe in Bailey Scott and what he can add to this side. Keep him there. Just leave him there. Let him do his thing.
Yeah. I think we've done that better in the last month is play players to their strengths more than Clarkson in the first 4 to 6
just
weeks.
Experimenting.
Trying to experiment a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, Archer coming in for some tackling pressure and then Fisher not playing in like the back pocket as much and getting rebounding. The ball off half back and rebounding more, you know, adjusting the game plan to try and hit short chip kicks and that sort of stuff with keeping more possession is better, which is how we were sort of saying they should be playing more a few weeks ago and playing to our strengths more, you know, not throwing Comben forward, let him just develop in the back line. McKercher not being down the back pocket all the time and that sort of stuff. So
speaking of McKercher.
Ooh, Colby.
Another
unbelievable,
really stellar performance from him. He is going to be something special.
We've got a player here.
We do.
We've got another one. It's Sheasel 2.0 with him. Look, maybe not blown the jocks off us as much as Sheasel did the first year, but it's as close as someone could get, I think.
The way Kirch has kind of stepped up in the last 3 weeks.
3 weeks especially,
Been – his confidence has, like, skyrocketed. He's looking so good.
The disposal, Marnie. Like, every time that ball touches his boot, I'm like, oh, it's going to hit someone directly on the chest. Hopefully not Nick Larkey because he's got a trampoline for a chest apparently the last 2 weeks. But I love Cole McKercher's disposal. What he did really well last night was knowing when to use his pace to – because it was wet and slippery and you couldn't tackle as easy, using his pace to run through someone a little bit more because he knew – because he was confident enough too. Or the one thing I thought he did well last game compared to any other one was when he's getting tackled, taking a second to find his options while he's getting tackled and getting the handball off to make his disposal efficiency even better. So Colby's really turning into a player and we've definitely found one here.
100%. I think that the inclusion of him and sort of him stepping up in the last 3 weeks has also been a reason why Shees can kind of push up and, you know, play further up the ground as well. So I think that the way that they're playing at the moment is, I think that's something that's really going to serve us well in the long term.
Some players we wanted more from. We've talked about LDU enough. Zerha, aside from flogging Hughes' goal, just –
I'll hold that grudge forever.
I fully believe you, Marnie. I fully believe you.
Yeah, it's done. We're done.
Maybe failed to impact the game very much. Laid some tackles, you know, but I think he got shrugged a lot as well. He was falling over a lot. You know, I would love to see him maybe push up into the midfield a little bit more in that game and try and get the ball.
Well, that's on Clarko. And that is on Clarko. That opportunity. I kind of put Zerha in the LDU basket a little bit, and I know it's just so ironic because they're the two people that
again might bail in the next couple of years.
But I think he's also just trying to do too much, and he's probably trying to create.
He has a swagger about him.
The support that he needs.
Yeah, he's got the ego. He's got the strut, right? He's got that thing where he's like he backs himself with how good he is.
Yeah.
That's kind of the reason why I think he might not re-sign, because I think he, more than maybe an LDU, wants to play the big Friday night games. And I know every player does, but I think he's got a little bit more arrogance, not in a bad way, but in an overly confident way about him. I don't know if his form suggests that he should be that confident and arrogant maybe. And I'm not using arrogant in a way to say he's arrogant, he's a bad person. I'm using it in a way as a confidence thing.
Yeah.
His form maybe doesn't match up to his level of confidence right now. And I think once those things align more, he can be an incredibly damaging player. But because they're not right now, the last 2 weeks he's been pretty good. He kicked 6 goals in 2 weeks, kicked another one, rightly or wrongly. But I don't think he was really bad. This section is all about we wanted more from them. Doesn't necessarily mean they were bad. So
it's just because we know he can give us more.
That's the same with the LDU criticism.
Exactly.
Paul Curtis.
Definitely his most underwhelming game for the season.
Yeah. He looked frustrated. He looked to play pretty deep in the forward line most of the game. He got a couple of centre bounces, I think. But other than that, he was really just like playing out of full forward most of the time. The one thing he did in the game that just, I was so mad, Marnie. And I was angry when we didn't kick that goal in the first quarter, which is also Paul Curtis.
Yeah.
Well, not his fault though. But he beat his opponent. It didn't beat him, but like they kicked the ball into the forward pocket. He was wrestling with his opponent. The ball bounced. He followed up. The ball bounced away again. And instead of like letting the ball go out for a throw-in, he's decided to kick the ball out of midair in the pocket to try and kick some wonder goal. And
it's just dumb.
And the ball, it was never, never going to kick that goal. And instead of letting it go for a throw-in where we can get our players forward and maybe get a goal from it, he just boots the thing out of bounds.
Yeah,
and silly. It was frustration. I get it, but you've got to be better than that. And that summed up Paul Curtis's night. We know the best and worst Paul Curtis is miles apart. We know that. And yeah. I think this year he's narrowed that.
100%. He's been one of our best performers this season, but sure.
that was a very disappointing moment for a very disappointing game from him. I back him to come back and bounce back from that, but very, very disappointing game. But look, the forward line was getting no service, so I don't blame him completely. I'm just saying with a game where the ball's always going to be coming to ground, I didn't notice him at the bottom of Larky's feet very much. I didn't notice him trying to get the ball off the ground, crumb the packs and kick those little dribbling goals from the boundary line or out of a contest or something like that.
You know, it's interesting, right? We had 11 tackles inside our forward 50 last night.
Mm.
And so the ball was staying down there for slightly longer periods of time. Yeah. Yet I think we failed to capitalize on those opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to last week, we didn't lay a tackle inside the forward 50, but we seemed to make something happen more often than we did this week.
Because the misleading thing about tackles inside 50 as well is we can lay a tackle inside 50 and it just causes another ball up. Doesn't mean the next ball up, the thing's not running out of our forward line. But then
that's how smaller players needing to be creative at ground level.
How many times did they get the ball and there was a player leading up on the wing and no one was on them? It's also setting up behind the ball a little bit more, which we just don't seem to do. We commit players to the contest so much, which has got better. Our contested work's got better the last few weeks, but we're committing so many players around the contest that when they inevitably win the ball out of the thing and boot it forward, we don't have numbers down the line to intercept.
Yeah.
And one-on-one, we're not the best team anyway. So, yeah, that's something that we need to be better at, but that's one of the many, many, many things we need to be better at.
We need to be better at hitting Nick Larky lace out on the chest.
Nick Larky, I think, also needs to be better at goal kicking, which I never thought I would say.
I know. He had an off night last night, but I think he's probably in that frustrated basket. I find it really hard to criticise Nick Larky.
So do I. But I think it's fair. Like when I was writing Larky's name down, I was like, I feel bad putting his name on the list. Yeah. But
because I think a lot of the reason why he doesn't deliver the way we expect him to is because he doesn't get the opportunity to do so. The ball doesn't come in often enough. The ball comes in and it is not kicked to his advantage whatsoever. But last night he did have more than enough opportunities and just
he could have kicked three or four.
He only kicked the one.
One goal, two, I think.
So that was pretty disappointing from him.
It was.
And it's a lot of pressure to put on one player, but that is the reality of where we're at the moment.
That's why he got a big 5-year deal, though, because he's the guy who has to take a lot of the pressure. That's why he's in the leadership group, because he's the one that has to step up in those big moments.
And definitely.
Yeah, he hasn't been able to do that this year, to be honest. I don't think he's had a bad year. Yeah. He's still chipping away with goals, but with what we expect from last season, I don't think anyone expected him to back up a 70-goal season. But yeah, he'll be lucky to hit 50 at this rate. You know what I mean? Or 40 even. So
I mean, the spread has been a bit more even. Curtis and Zerha have both chipped in. However, you know, he is still our key forward and we do probably need a bit more of an output from him.
Yeah, we're getting more goals from Wardlaw and Powell and Eddie Ford when he's in the team as well, and Jaden Stevenson
Bring
last
Eddie
night.
Ford so back, please.
Absolutely. He must be in the team. But yeah, don't like criticizing Larky too much, because we know what
it's
he means
probably,
to the club.
It's
but
probably fair it's on fair. This occasion. Definitely.
It's fair. The only other player I sort of wanted more from was maybe Blake Drury. Blake Drury's been okay. I don't know if he's done enough to warrant continuous selection, but I'm also not disappointed if he keeps getting a chance, because we don't really have anyone else to come in and bring that. He doesn't really add. Our problem the last few years with small forwards, with Robert Hansen and Jack Marnie and Kane Turner when he was playing down there, they don't bring goals.
Yeah.
And Blake Drury, his first game, kicked a couple, but he hasn't been able to do that again. I don't think he's kicked one since, has he? So, you know, last week against the Saints, he was really good at leading up the ground and taking a lot of marks and, you know, delivering into our 50, but he just – I'm not upset if we stick with him, and I know we don't really have anyone else to bring in for him, except – I know only because Eddie Ford maybe doesn't play the same role, but I wouldn't be upset if we maybe gave Drury a week in the twos and brought Eddie Ford back in maybe next week to change something up, because I don't think anyone else in that forward line can be dropped. But Drury has maybe been a little bit underwhelming for me, but I think he maybe still deserves a chance.
He's a long-term project for me. I think he definitely has shown traits of danger, and I think that he's shown signs that he actually can really contribute to our game week in, week out. But I do agree with you. It's very similar to Charlie Conbin last year when he was up forward and he was doing all the right things but hitting the scoreboard.
Yeah.
We do need players to hit the scoreboard because there aren't enough of them. So I think he was rightly subbed out of the game last night.
I think so.
But I don't know. I don't really have a strong opinion whether we should keep him in the side or we should drop him.
No. That's kind of what I was trying to say as well. It's like, I'm not sure. Like, you know, he's been a little bit underwhelming.
I think he's doing enough, but I'd like more from him.
Yes. The thing I worry about with Blake Drury, and this is not at all a direct comparison to the player, he's got a little bit of Jack Marnie about him, and I'll justify that. Not because I don't think he's got any potential, like I think Jack Marnie, the Gold Coast Suns' number one recruit in the offseason, Jack Marnie. He's not quick. He's not big. He doesn't really tackle, and he doesn't really kick goals at the moment. I'm not sure what is Blake Drury's.
He's a good user of the football.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have a lot of those.
I'm yet to feel like I'm confident with him with ball in hand.
That's fair enough.
I'm not saying he can't. I know his leadership qualities were a reason he came in. We've had a lot of players with leadership qualities haven't turned into much, but.
Oh, he's played like a handful of
games. I'm not saying that about him. Right. I'm just saying that I'm yet to see what is Blake Drury's best asset? And if it's leadership, that concerns me. Not because I don't think he can, but I think if a player's asset is leadership, then that's kind of like a Will Phillips. We say, what's his best asset? Probably his leadership quality with what he got brought in and drafted for. Well, that's great, but his quality overall hasn't really come to much. Drury is the same at the moment, but I think hopefully he can break down that thing. You know, a player that size, I want pace from.
Yeah.
And goal kick and danger around goal. And if he doesn't bring that, I'm not sure that he'll
develop into
what we want him to be. Enough. So I think he can, and I'm not saying he won't be, but I guess at the moment I'm not seeing one particular asset of Blake Drury that's going to keep him in the side.
Okay.
That's my main point.
That's fair.
Do you want to talk about Will Phillips super quickly? Because I don't think he was bad. I don't think he was good.
No, I thought he had a good return.
Does he get a game next week?
Yeah, I think he should.
You think he should? I agree.
I'm a big believer in you need to play Will Phillips.
Do you trust that they'll keep him in though?
No, if Jai's available, I think he sets aside.
So you think they'll swap Jai for Will Phillips?
Yeah, I think Will Phillips has been a very easy target And unfortunately, I just think he's, you know, he does, you know, he doesn't set the world on fire. Then he's been told to step aside. I don't agree with that. I think he needs to have a run of, you know, 5, 6, 7 games. But
I think he played all right against the Bombers last year, didn't he? So maybe
it'll be interesting to see which way they go. I mean, I don't know what. They have not really given us much information on this mysterious injury because Clarko said during the week he was fine and then obviously didn't play last night.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just wait and see if he does come back, if he is right, and then go from there.
Yeah, I got a gut feeling it's more about like lingering concussion symptoms though.
Potentially.
Because and if Jai needs to take a month to get right and then come back, I mean, it is what it is. He hasn't really set the world on fire.
No,
anyway,
he's had a pretty poor season.
And if Jai maybe makes room for a few weeks to get himself right for a Will Phillips and see if he can play
I'm
him into form,
for it.
I think that's maybe the way to go. All right, let's go to Sean at the Club Champ because my laptop is actually about to die. So we should finish this thing up. The three votes this week, Marnie, do you want to read them out?
Yeah, so we've gone three votes for Comben. We love Charlie Comben and he was unbelievable, especially in that first quarter.
Even in the second half for me, the effort still, the toughness to push through his shoulder
well,
and
you know
still taking intercept marks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was best on for me, so yeah.
Comben 3, we've gone Fish for the 2 and McKercher with 1.
Yeah. I think any players to like mention, Steve-O, I think maybe Stiff to miss out, but I think consistently for the game maybe those were better. I would say Steve-O maybe, you know, maybe doesn't deserve votes only because the bar was set so low that he went above that still. But if he does that consistently, then maybe he'll feature in votes eventually.
Steve-O did have a really great return. Obviously loved the fight that Archer brought.
Yep.
I thought Core had a really solid game. Scott was good. I mean, all the guys we've spoken about. I thought LDU's second half was pretty good. I know that people will disagree and that's okay. But I think that, you know, the discussion around him is sort of what we expect versus what he delivers.
I think the only other one we could argue for putting in the votes is probably Steve-O. Other than that, and Archer's intent was there, but I think Steve-O's maybe the only other one.
I think those three were the three standouts.
I agree.
Something I do want to touch on, and it was sort of something I came in this morning and I said, I've got a nugget for you to finish off the pod.
Yes.
Next week we play Essendon.
Okay.
It's our last game in Melbourne for about 4 weeks. And it's our last opportunity to see North play in Melbourne this side of the bye. And then the week after the bye, we're in Perth. So it's a few weeks we won't be able to see North play in person.
Mm.
I want you to think about someone you care about, be it a family member, a friend, something like that.
Very introspective, yeah.
And they're going through a really tough time. And you catch wind of this. And I think for anyone who really cares about somebody, your knee-jerk reaction is to be there for them. So, and to support them through whatever they're going through.
Okay,
so for me, if you were upset, Josh, and there have been times where we've confided in each other, we've been there to support each other through the tough times and to really be there for one another. That's what North fans have to do with North Melbourne.
I agree with that.
I think that it is so easy to cancel your membership and, you know, why do I care and, you know, all this sort of thing. And we've said this multiple times on this podcast, but the reality is that this club can't get better and this club can't progress without us. If we don't care, then there is no way known that any of those players on the field
if
are
going to
care.
If we don't care, why would the players care?
Exactly. And I know that the fans think that they need to see the players care for them to show up week in, week out. It's a relationship. It's a two-way street. And it's weird because I think this season I feel like I've been sucked in to the emotion of the game more than I've ever been before. I care about this club and I want this club. I just want this club to succeed. And I want to back them in harder than I've ever wanted to
We
before.
Will be there when they're good again.
Exactly. And I just think that, and we've said this before, and it's just a fresh way of looking at it. But if you can get down to Marvel Stadium next week, please come support the team. I think it's Essendon's home game, which might make it a little bit difficult. But if anyone has tickets, let us know. If you're looking for tickets, let us know. We'll put you in contact with the right people.
Mm. There'll be GA tickets. You know, you can rock up at the gate and probably grab a GA there as well.
And
I
just think that, yes, it's hard, it's tough. But, you know, when you see someone that you care about crying out for help and crying out for support and when they really just need someone to help them get through that time, you are there for them. And that is the exact same way that North fans should be for this club. The other thing I do want to say is that you need to find ways, and I've said this on the podcast as well, you need to find ways to make things fun for you and to make footy a positive experience. And I don't think that I do that. We do that on the podcast.
Some people find that easier than others though. You definitely find it easier than me, but I thought last night while I was watching, I'm like, I need to just find the little things in this game.
100%.
Otherwise it's going to be an incredibly long year for everybody, which it's going to be anyway because we care. But, you know, it might sound stupid to some people, but it's true. Like you exactly. can't just walk out when it gets tough and you need to, you know, you need to find those little things like McKercher, like Archer's, you know, pushing through the pain, like Charlie falling on his shoulder and getting up and doing it again.
And I'm so sorry that I don't want to sit here and sulk in my negativity constantly because that, I mean, no one should have to apologize for that, but I know for me personally, through the podcast and through social media and, you know, through the relationships we have with people that, you know, care about the club, I'm trying to make this as fun and as positive as possible. And seeing Q out there last night was, you know, it just made me so happy. Yeah.
He played. Pick a player that you love and then like just watch them play.
You know,
and see
he
what
played
they do.
His role and he did exactly what we needed him to do. You know, the follow-up efforts, the tackling, you know, that's exactly what we needed from him and that's exactly what he did. And so that's what I do. And I'm sorry for anyone who doesn't like that. But at the same time, that's how I make it an enjoyable experience. And I would encourage everybody else to do the same thing.
Just to end on then, I think that is true. And the Further North podcast is always going to try and be a positive outlet for North Melbourne. We love the club. And, you know, we've changed the way we review games a little bit because we don't want to just sit on here and review and tell you all the bad things and negative things that we did.
We just
want
to have a discussion about it.
Yeah. But we're also here to try and make everyone feel a little bit of positivity about the club in a very dark time. We're not making anything up that we say. It's all true. You know, everything we say is 100% fact, especially my Aiden Core opinions. Just a joke from last week. But look, I don't know. It's always going to be a positive outlet. And if you want positive, fun North Melbourne chat, this is the place to be. Close to a Flag is there. You know, there's other places to look for things that if you want to really get negative, but this is not the place to do that. So you're going to get positivity as much as we can every single week. The other positive thing about getting down to Marvel Stadium, Marnie, is you can see Nick Larkey kick his first bag of 9 against Ben Mackay next weekend, which will be very exciting. So on that note,
before we get to that game against Essendon, you can stay up to date with us this week.
Oh, I was about to end it. Yes, I forgot. Okay. just do the social thing. I always forget.
Never forget your dose of North Melbourne positivity to get you through the week. Further North Pod on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube. Hi, YouTube, if you're watching.
Please subscribe on YouTube, guys. We're going to get to 1,000. Subscribers by the end of the year. That's the goal.
How exciting.
And I want 1,000 on Instagram
so by the end of the year. So for those who don't follow, please do. We really, really, again, appreciate all your love and support, all your voice memos that you send through after every single game, furthernorthpod@gmail.com. Keep them fun, keep them spicy, keep them 15 seconds or less.
Yes. We've had a few like 3-minute ones. I'm like, oh God.
This is not therapy. I'm so sorry, guys.
It kind of is, but it's kind of not.
Thank you guys so much. We will see you during the week for our preview against Essendon, and we'll see you down at Marvel Stadium on Sunday at 1:10.
Absolutely. See you next time, everybody.
See you later.